This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Let's go to Luke and Mark, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys.
Luke and Mark, Texas, you can't miss it. It's hunkered between South Grape Creek and Snail Creek on the south side of Ranch to Market Road 1376. It's 69 miles west of Austin and a mere 13 miles to Fredericksburg. It was Waylon Jennings' tune Back to the Basics of Love that put Luckenbach on the map. In the early days of the 20th century, Luckenbach was a thriving little town with close to 500 residents. But by the 1960s, it claimed just 3 residents. That's when the legendary Hondo Crouch and his partner bought the ghost town and started a dance hall and pub. The town's rebirth was propelled in the summer of 1973 when Jerry Jeff Walker and the Lost Gonzo Band recorded live in the dance hall the outlaw country classic Viva Terlingua.
Friends come for Saturday night. Man, it's not to make up some sangria wine.
It was game on for Luckenbach when Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson recorded the number one country chart hit, Luckenbach, Texas, Back to the Basics of Love.
Let's go to Luckenbach, Texas, with Waylon and Willie and the boys. The successful life we're living got us few.
Come along for a visit with Hayden Whittington, who's been a part of the local scene since 1974. Next up is the National Museum of the Pacific War. Come along and join me for a visit with retired 4-star General Michael Hagee, who was the 33rd Commandant of the United States Marine Corps. He's now CEO of the Admiral Nimitz Foundation and the Museum of the Pacific War in Fredericksburg. Hagee talks about the 55,000 square foot museum that showcases the story of World War II in the Pacific and the Admiral Nimitz Gallery. Due to COVID-19, the museum is currently open only by appointment. The Elk Store Winery and Distillery is located on Main Street in Fredericksburg, Texas. Come along for a visit with the owner, Todd, to discover Elk's moonshine made on site and the array of exceptional wines from around the world and some fascinating insights about the legacy of Prohibition.
San Antonio.
Chase's Place Cocktails is predicated on great craft cocktails, fine food, and a homey environment where the personality of the owners is an integral part of the magic. Come along for a visit with Tara Guthrie about the startup that opened just as the world shut down due to COVID-19. But Tara and her husband Chase's business remains open with social distancing as an integral part of their model.
From your long black hair.
In the heart of town is the Green Fox Guesthouse B&B. It's situated in one of the oldest homes in Fredericksburg, built in 1850. Owner Tracy Dodd shares insights about the renovation of the historic home and its homey amenities.
From Amarillo all the way to London Hall, in honky-tonks from Green to Abilene, I hit the highway.
I struggle with Texan. I'm going to learn English as soon as I get Texan.
I'm fixing to.
Fixing to.
No, she is.
Yes, sir. Y'all. You know the plural of y'all?
Y'all.
All y'all.
All y'all.
All y'all.
Yes, all
y'all.
My name is Hayden Whittington. I'm a bar manager and grounds manager. Welcome to beautiful downtown Luckenbach. We get people from all over the world. Yeah. A lot of German tourists come here, so with our German heritage. This has been here since 1849, and we're still going strong. These buildings have been here since as early as 1887. German people settled here, mingled with the Indians, coexisted. Primarily are a music venue today, a general store and bar. Live music every day of the year except Thanksgiving and Christmas. As soon as we get past our predicament we're in right now, we hope to get going back good and strong.
Rolling back in the day, it was Waylon Jennings and a couple other characters that put this place on the map, huh?
Yeah, that's right. It's actually Guy Clark and Towns Van Zandt spent some time here and would go back to Nashville. And they were talking to some songwriters and telling them about Leukenbach, and they came up with the Back to the Basics song, or as most people call it, the Leukenbach song. We have people about to take the stage. I bet they can probably sing it for you. Anyway, it's the song, and it made us international. Basically, in 77, put us on the map, but the two songwriters never came here.
Oh, really? Was it premiered here or kind of unveiled here?
Actually, Marge, the sheriff, who was our bartender at the time, someone called her and was playing it over the phone. So we had no idea at the time, and she was just amazed that someone wrote a song about Leukenbach, Texas. So Hondo, unfortunately, passed away in 76 before the song hit and it really took off. But they had the Leukenbach World's Fair. They didn't actually have it here. They had it in the fairgrounds. They had, what's Jimmy Lee? Well, he's already leaving. He could sing it for you. They had like 20,000 people show up for that. Most of our pickers out here look like that. People come out and they're like trying to figure out a certain picker. Got gray hair and a gray beard. You leaving, Jimmy Lee?
I am.
See you around like a donut.
All righty.
With the hole.
But Willie Nelson and Waylon, they came here and performed, right, in the barn?
Yeah, actually, Willie did. Waylon was only here one time for the 1997 picnic. Willie would come here and actually play dominoes with the old-timers. They had a couple of major domino tournaments, and, of course, the old-timers showed them how to do it.
Tell us the story of when the president came up to the domino players.
Well, Lyndon Johnson lived probably about 15 minutes from here on his ranch, and they were playing dominoes in here, the old guys. And one day, Lyndon came in, wanted to talk to him, and that kind of irritated him. So when they left, one of the domino players says, "Who's that guy think he is?" And John Engle, who lived down the road, said, "That was the president." The other guy said, "President of what?" So that kind of gave you an idea of the mindset of the old-timers that would hang out here.
And so today, Leukenbach is still a tiny little town, isn't it?
Well, it was never incorporated, and we keep the population sign at 3 in honor of the last three Engels. But, yeah, it's actually a music venue now. But, yeah, we were a thriving little community up to about the late 1920s. And as you hear now, they're playing the song right now on stage.
Yep, there it is.
Yep.
I love it. All right. Well, anything else you want to add? Now is the time to add the secrets.
Well, we're here to make music, make memories, and make friends. You can't forget memories, Hondo would say. So we love to love on people that come out here, and that's our primary goal, is to make people feel at home and want to come back. So
no big concerts here for now?
Not for the present. We hope to get back to that pretty soon. My name is Hayden Whittington. I'm a bar manager and grounds manager.
And you've been working here and coming here since the 70s.
Actually, I started coming here in 74. Got a job here in about 13 years ago, and I've been working here ever since they threatened to fire me. Went to work that very day.
I love it. Thanks again.
Yes, sir. Thanks for coming out.
My pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Leukenbach, Texas. We'll see you here. So explain what's going on here on this stage.
This is a picker circle. It's open to anybody who wants to join in. We have a host. In this case, we have a married couple who are hosting. So we have these 5 or 6 days a week.
So the pickers that come here, they're mostly from around the county?
We have them actually from all over. Mm-hmm. So we do have loaner guitars, and we get people from other countries even come and join in.
So when I was here a couple winters ago, it was almost freezing out.
Yep.
And it was at night, and they were playing inside the bar. So that's what happens to the picker.
Yes, sir. We get around the wood stove, and those are actually some of the best times to be out here. So hopefully by the time it gets cold, we'll be past what we're dealing with now and back inside.
Fire up the stove.
Yep, absolutely. Thank y'all for coming out.
Yeah. What's your name?
Rick Rowe from Toledo, Ohio.
You're on a road trip today? It looks like you've been on a motorcycle.
Yeah, come down to visit my cousin, Lance Ward. This is one of the places he wanted to bring us to.
It's your first time here, then?
Yes, sir.
And you're glad you came?
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful down here. He's telling me a little bit of the history of it and stuff, and, I mean, it's pretty neat.
Come along and join us in Fredericksburg, Texas, for a visit with four-star General Hagee, president and CEO of the Admiral Nimitz Foundation that oversees the Nimitz Museum and the National Museum of the Pacific War. General Michael Hagee, the 33rd Commandant of the United States Marine Corps. You retired as a four-star general from the United States Marine Corps. You could have done anything you wanted. You could have named your ticket, and you chose Fredericksburg, Texas. Tell us about that story.
Well, I think it's probably a little overstated, Tom, that I could have named my ticket. But yeah, I could have gone several different ways. I was raised here in Fredericksburg. I love the town here. I love the people here. They're really the heart of America, and I had a great opportunity to replace an admiral who was here running the Admiral Nimitz Foundation. Unfortunately, he passed away unexpectedly. We have a beautiful museum complex here, which focuses on World War II in the Pacific. I was able to come home. I was able to continue working with military history. I was able to continue working with young men and women. This just seemed to be the right place to come.
Give us an overview, a picture. It's called the National Museum of the Pacific War.
When it started back in the late 60s, it was, in fact, the Nimitz Naval Museum, and it was focused on the U.S. Navy in World War II. But over the past over 40 years, we have expanded that significantly. It is called the National Museum of the Pacific War, but it's really composed of different museums in this complex. We have the George H.W. Bush Gallery, which focuses on operations in the Pacific during World War II. We have the Nimitz Museum, which is housed in the old Nimitz Hotel that Admiral Nimitz's grandfather built back in the late 1800s here in Fredericksburg. We also have a small museum in the Nimitz Hotel that talks about the German immigrants that came to Fredericksburg in May of 1846. We have a Japanese peace garden that the people of Japan gave to us, the American people. It's here in Fredericksburg as a symbol of peace and also as a symbol of their honor of Admiral Nimitz, whom they respected highly. We have the Presidential Plaza, which talks about each one of the presidents who served sometime during World War II, either as commander-in-chief or as, like Jimmy Carter, President Carter, as a midshipman. We have a memorial courtyard which honors all those men and women who served in the Pacific during World War II. And then finally, we have our newest addition, the Nimitz Education and Research Center, which houses our tremendous collection of documents, photos, audio tapes, which is open to researchers throughout the world.
This is the most extensive museum complex in the United States, specifically dedicated to the United States naval operations in the Pacific.
It is the only museum in the United States that focuses solely on the war in the Pacific. I would only add to what you said, it's Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Army Air Corps at that time, Coast Guard, and Merchant Marine. All six of those services that served in the Pacific during World War II, we tell the story of the men and women in those services during that time.
And I imagine that you go to great lengths trying to garner oral histories from the people who are still alive that served in World War II.
You're absolutely right. We believe this is extremely important to get those oral histories. We have quite a collection of oral histories right now, and anytime we have a World War II veteran who comes through here, we always ask him at the front desk, have you had an opportunity to give your oral history? And if they haven't, and if they want to, we'll get someone to do that. We actually do it over the telephone, too, because once those individuals are gone, and unfortunately, as you know, they're passing away at a very high rate, those stories are gone forever.
The other thing that I think is incredibly fascinating about your complex are the artifacts, airplanes and tanks and things. Tell us about the things that somebody would see here.
Well, we have a wide variety of artifacts, and unfortunately, like most museums, we can't show everything that we have. But we have a Japanese float plane, only float plane that was configured as a fighter. It's the only one completely restored and on display anywhere in the world today. We have a Japanese mini midget submarine, an actual submarine that participated in the attack on Pearl Harbor on the 7th of December, 1941, actually taken up out of the bottom, was used in a Bond tour throughout the United States. We have a picture of it coming through Fredericksburg when they were raising money. We found it down in Florida. Only one on display, fully restored.
I heard a story that you had, wasn't it a Japanese naval guy that was on board the submarine or somebody that came back here and talked about it?
Is that correct? Absolutely correct. We've actually had veterans from both sides come here and tell their stories. And I think that's a very important point, Tom. This is not about a war between people. This is about what especially young men and women, Americans, did in a very critical time in our history, telling their story. But we also try to tell what happened on the other side, some of the devastation that occurred, not only in Japan, but on the islands. And we've had Japanese come here and tell us stories about what happened to them. And that's all part of this education experience that we try to provide here.
When you think of the museum and what you're doing here, what are you most proud of? What comes first to mind? What do you want to show off and showcase?
I would say two things right now. We brought a lot of World War II veterans here. Many of them, after they walked into the museum, they were there for 30 minutes or so, they had to leave. They said it was too real. It brought it all back. And several of the families came up to us and said, you know, this is the first time my father, this is the first time my grandfather talked about it. That, to me, is really quite exciting, and one of the things that this museum has done. It has captured those stories, and it has helped those individuals tell the stories and remember that very important time in their life. The second thing it does is it educates all Americans, but especially young Americans. Unfortunately, today, in my mind, we spend very little time talking about that period, which to me was one of the most dangerous periods, if not the most dangerous period during the 20th century. Democracy was truly threatened in the Pacific and in the Atlantic. We tell the stories of those young men and women who left professional sports, who left families, who left everything they had to fight for this country and did it very well. We want the young people today to understand the price of freedom and what these young men and women did. It's not about war. I've been on many battlefields, and I can tell you, war is terrible. I don't want wars, but unfortunately, sometimes we're forced into fighting them. And we want to tell the stories of men and women who, in fact, did that very well. And that would be the second thing I'm very proud of.
I'm sure that you think about this every day, but as I'm listening to you, I go, you are so blessed in that not only do you get to meet in person some of these incredible heroes and survivors of World War II, but the young, new generation. So you're in this cool position where you are breathing life into the future.
It really is. You know, the older generation, the individuals who fought in World War II, and the real young generation, they have at least one thing in common. The old guys and gals, they will tell you exactly what they think. And they don't worry about political correctness. They just say, this is what happened, and this is what I think. And by and large, the young guys and gals think that too. It's in the middle where they start worrying a little bit more about what they're saying. But you're absolutely correct. Opportunity to bring individuals who served in World War II and other servicemen and servicewomen and bring them together with young people so that they can exchange stories and understand one another is really exciting.
Very, very cool. Wonderful. But we're out of time, Michael. Thank you so much.
Tom, it's been my pleasure. Best of luck to you.
Thank you. An honor. We've been speaking with General Michael Hagee, former Commandant of the United States Marine Corps, who has a new wonderful life at the National Museum of the Pacific War in Fredericksburg, Texas. This is your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting.
Thank you. I'm Todd Smystrela, owner of Elk Store Winery and Distillery in Fredericksburg, Texas.
Cool. So you've been here quite a while, haven't you, in Fredericksburg?
I have. Yeah, I moved to Fredericksburg in 1993. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Going on 30 years now.
And you bailed out of the big city?
Bailed out of the big city. Went to college up in at North Texas in Denton and lived in Dallas for a number of years, then Houston after that, and said, yeah, no, don't want to do that anymore.
Interesting.
So, and have never looked back.
Yeah. But food and beverage has always been in your blood, right?
It always has been. I'm some sort of a anomaly in the fact that I guess I got into wines very young, and I was like 10.
Wow.
Yeah, and just by happenstance, I don't know, it's just been an affinity and an affection and a passion, and then it turned into a business, and you could say went pro at it in about 1987, 88.
Mm-hmm. So today we're in a wine bar, basically?
We're actually a distillery and a winery, but we operate like a speakeasy and a wine bar, yes.
Interesting. But in the back room, you have a distillery, right?
We
right
do.
Here.
Yeah, we have a handmade copper pot still made in Bourbon County, Kentucky, all out of flat sheet copper. I mean, it's my design, so it's a one-off. Yeah, we make every bit of our own liquor right here in the building.
Interesting. So making whiskey, you start out as a beer maker, right?
You do,
but
yeah.
You just keep going.
You do, yeah.
I mean,
so,
literally, right?
But I mean, yeah, you do. Yeah, you make an unrefined beer, if you will. They call it a wort, right, or a mash. So then that is distilled, and you're just taking the alcohol off of that. But most of what we make, see, my great-grandfather was a moonshiner during Prohibition.
Right here in Texas.
Right here in Texas, in Elk, Texas, and he owned the Elk Store in Elk, Texas. And it was cotton country, so there wasn't a lot of grain around that area, but he had a general store, so he had ample supply of sugar. So he made his liquor out of pure cane sugar. I mean, sugar is the only thing that ferments and distills into pure ethanol. So there's no methanol because you don't have to break down any grain to get to it. So yeah, most everything we make, with the exception of our whiskey, is all a pure cane sugar base.
But then you add some little flavor characteristics to that base. Give us an example of what most popular and resonates with people right now the most.
Well, I mean, you know, so in lieu of a vodka, we make a pure shine. We make a pure luxury premium moonshine, and it's not the rot gut stuff that's 100 million proof that peeled paint off. This is 80 proof, same as a vodka, but it is made from pure cane sugar, and it's clean. We don't add any chemicals. Only thing we add to it is we proof it down with our Hill Country spring water that's been filtered seven different times, seven different ways. It's beautiful. We use it in lieu of vodka, and matter of fact, I say not only is it gluten-free, but it's hangover-free because there's no methanol
in it.
That's
pure. That's fascinating.
And then we oak-age some of that, and we make it into what we call a charter. That's what they called it in South Louisiana, basically oak-age moonshine. Smoother than the smoothest whiskey. But we can't technically put whiskey on the label because there's no grain in it. We do make a blended whiskey.
So what do you call it?
We call it Charter. Okay. But we're about to change the name because we're going to go to the market with it, and we're pretty sure Old Charter wouldn't like that. We're going to change the name into a Prohibition-era dark spirit. And it's so weird to think that grain, that liquid can have a texture, but it does. And grain adds a coarseness to a whiskey where sugar is silk, and grain is sandpaper. It's amazing. I'll let you taste them, and you'll see them side by side, and you'll try.
Yeah. Let's go back in time for a moment, because I find it fascinating. One, you can't outlaw people's desire to drink.
It'll never happen.
It never happened. They tried it once, and it was a miserable failure. Yeah. And Prohibition transformed the whole liquor
cocktail industry.
Yeah, tell us about that story of how it was responsible for that.
It's funny that everything that we think of in the modern cocktail lounge and bar is due to Prohibition and the speakeasy. Before Prohibition, there were only saloons, and they were men only. Women weren't allowed in. There was sawdust on the floor, and you just drank straight rot gut liquor until you passed out or you ran out of money. Then Prohibition hit, and the next thing you know, the illegal speakeasy pops up. Well, people don't realize that the 18th Amendment also gave women the right to vote, so they're empowered. And so when the men started going to illegal speakeasies, so did the women. they said, hey, we're just as illegal as you. We're going. And so the next thing you know, speakeasy owners had to start sprucing up the places and making them look nice and fancier chairs and cushier chairs. And then women didn't like the taste of just straight liquor. So they started finding all the cocktails that were being made in Europe and brought those to America and created their own cocktails.
So pre-Prohibition, cocktails were minuscule. There was no cocktail.
There was no such thing as a cocktail. Men just drank straight. You just drank straight liquor. I mean, how many times have you watched an old Western movie and they go into the saloon, give them a shot glass and a bottle of whiskey, and that's what you did. All of that was to make it more palatable for the ladies. And then they softened the look of the place as well as softened the drinks. It's funny, you know, you can do the research online, but it didn't take but a year or two after Prohibition started that America became the number one importer of cocktail shakers in the world.
Wow, interesting. Back to your grandfather.
Great-grandfather.
Great-grandfather. Yes. He was moonshiner right here in Hill Country. Near New Braunfels?
Near just north of Waco, near the little town of West. It's a little town of Elk, and you're not going to tell a Czech he can't have a drink. Yeah. So when Prohibition hit, he owned the Elk store, and it was the hub of all activity. It was where everybody hung out and drank, and it was the grocery store, it was the post office, it was the hardware store, it was everything. So when they said you can't sell liquor anymore, He started making his own shine, and next thing you know, before long, he had 50 stills running.
Wow. And,
yeah, so he was one of the largest moonshiners in all of Central Texas.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you're like fifth generation?
Third generation.
But you got kids, right?
I have two daughters, yes.
Yeah, so fourth and fifth coming up.
Yeah, I've tried to get them into the industry. They enjoy the product, but they're so far not interested in being a part of it.
Okay, so somebody comes to Fredericksburg to see you and learn more about your world. Where would they go?
Sure. Just come on down Main Street, Fredericksburg. We're right here on...
Their name
is? It's Elk Store Winery and Distillery, right here in downtown Main Street. We'd love to see you.
Somebody wanted to go on the World Wide Web and learn more about you.
We're just launching a brand new fabulous website, elkstore1895.com. And that was 1895 is when Elk Store was founded. Cool. And I'm Todd Smystrel, and come down and say hi.
Todd, what a pleasure to meet you, man. Great afternoon.
Thank you so much.
One early Thursday morning, only birds about me singing. The small town working men were passing by.
I'm Tara Guthrie. I am one half of the ownership of Chase's Place Cocktails and Kitchen in Fredericksburg, Texas.
Very cool. And you're off of Main Street. You're on a side street.
Yes, just one block off of Main Street. We're sandwiched between the Fredericksburg Inn, the inn on Barron's Creek side, and the Immigrants Inn.
I think there's some really cool advantages to kind of being almost a neighborhood feel.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We're walkable.
And not the crazy freneticness out on the sidewalk either. It's really cool. It really gives you a feel like going to somebody's house.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's what we were going for whenever we imagined the space. My husband and I were in Austin for 11 years before we moved out here to Fredericksburg to do the hospitality thing. I spent a few years in the wine industry while we were putting this together. And what we wanted it to be was a space we like to hang out in, a place that just about anybody feels comfortable, so it's not really designed for one vibe or another. It vibes with just about anybody. We want it to feel really approachable.
I would say it has a living room den sort of feel. Part of it's the natural wood ceiling, hardwood floors, the furnishing. It's just really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So this house was built in 1941. It was a mini little farmstead back then, and we wanted to pay homage to that. It has a lot of impact on the ambiance. Like you said, it feels like it's very homey vibe because it was a house.
But you could have totally plastered it and lost it in the process, yeah.
Right, exactly. But actually, like all around you, you see the original shiplap. When they pulled the sheetrock off of the walls, you see the nail marks. Like, it's just too beautiful.
That's so cool.
This original wood was so warm and inviting. Don't cover it. Don't do anything to it.
Yeah, and it's almost like because it was covered for so long, it preserved it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It was waiting for us, that's all.
Okay, so you guys had just perfect timing, didn't you, on opening this business?
With COVID?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was just telling you the building permit process in Fredericksburg, Texas, especially in the historic district, is no baloney, right? They want you to prove that you want to be here. And so the permitting process actually took us about 9.5, almost 10 months after we closed on the property and presented the blueprints. Once we got that building permit, it took us about 10 months to renovate the space. This is actually the original hardwood floor. It's a pier and beam foundation, but we had to rip it all up and double in force because we've got added occupancy and then put the original floor back. This over here is the original fireplace. It has a modern twist to it, but the original brick, communicating that we're paying homage and preserving all of those elements, it takes a little bit through the bureaucratic red tape. After 10 months of renovation, we got our permits to operate the last week of March. We were signing employee W-2s the very week that everything got shut down. So navigating this has been... like I told you, Tom, I'm going to write a book about this one day. What it was like.
Nobody's going to believe you.
What it was like opening a restaurant and bar in the middle of one of the most tumultuous times for restaurant and bars.
So you had to literally close when you opened.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yes.
You now have been able to reopen or open belatedly. And how's it been going? How have you been making sure that people do the social distancing and whatnot?
Well, it's kind of difficult because the inherent design of the space is to be a social space.
I know.
Isn't that so
our,
tough
one?
We kind of thought about our locals first whenever we designed this. And then, like I was saying, also the places that we really like to hang out in. And they're really fluid spaces. So like this banquette over here, you can start as a party of two, and then four more of your friends show up, and then two more of your friends show up, and all of a sudden you've taken over half of my dining room space. That's what I want. I love seeing that. But for the most part, everybody has been very respectful. For the first 3 weeks, though, I'll be honest with you, I had my coming soon sign still up outside because I knew my locals knew I was open. So it was primarily people that just kind of had an inside line for a bit.
Yeah, to keep it a slow...
It helped me with crowd control because we did still have tourists walk up, and we love that, but it also kind of helped us mitigate a little bit.
Yeah, no kidding.
But yeah, it's been very interesting, all of the unknowns and unexpecteds, and... Because we are brand new, because we had no billing except for, you know, construction for 2019, we didn't qualify for PPP.
We
got denied emergency funding, the EIDL, through the Small Business Administration. So we are literally bootstrapping this, and our community people are the ones that are helping us get through. I can't tell you how overwhelmed with gratitude that I am for the locals that we have.
That's so cool. Isn't it just... amazing how life works. I mean, timing, yeah. And who would imagine? You go to sleep one day and everything's normal, and yeah.
I have to tell you, too, in all of those unknowns, I've tried to see silver lining. I've tried to see small blessings in disguise. For us, having limited capacity at first gave us some time to work out some kinks, and keeping it local at first. Also, the patrons were more forgiving as we kind of figured out what works and what doesn't.
Right, right.
Those are actually advantages to
us. I think they're big advantages, yeah.
So,
the thing I've experienced, and I know you have too, going around Fredericksburg's, is the locals are very sensitive and very cognizant and trying as hard as they can to do it right.
Yes, I can definitely echo that. We've been chamber members since before we were able to open the door. So once we started construction, we actually joined our local Chamber of Commerce. And Penny McBride at the Chamber of Commerce has been invaluable to us. And so is that community. So being on Zoom calls and conferences and being able to collaborate with one another on how do we approach a reopening and what do we do as a community to make sure that everybody weathers the storm. I don't know that I could say if I was anywhere else that I would have that luxury. So
that's pretty cool. Anything you want to add about your world here or now?
My husband, he's pretty awesome. And Chase, of Chase's Place. Yeah, so he was bar manager, beverage manager for Trudy's Texas Star Inc. in Austin for 6 years before we moved here in 2016. That's kind of where he cut his teeth on understanding bar operations and how to be sustainable. And he won't tell you these things, but I will. While he was there and in charge of training everyone, they got Huffington Post's Best Bloody Mary in America, and then also Texas Monthly's Best Margarita in Texas.
Wow.
So he's got some pretty good chops to go from, and that's why we chose to use his name on the signage, because he's got a pretty great local following, and I said, we built it for locals. So.
Well, I was going to ask you if you had Austinites come up here that know him.
Actually, we had the owner of Broken Spoken here this week, and then a couple of key team members from the bar at Luster Pearl, and we've also had a few in from Bar 1919 in San Antonio. So we're actually starting to get and see some word of mouth rumble amongst the industry, because Chase is part of the USBG, the United States Bartenders Guild, a trade organization. So we try to stay plugged in those ways and give back to our professional community and also this community, and it's really worked out very well for us. So the chickens, a little bit about our logo. This house was owned by a fellow that raised purebred Icelandic chickens. And there's a coop out back. One of Chase's bar regulars actually inherited those very chickens, that very flock of birds. When he found out we were the owners of this place and what we were doing with it, he actually offered us the birds back. So they just got put back in the coop about 2 or 3 weeks ago. We've also planted an herb garden out back that we'll be using for our cocktails and in our kitchen, where we're doing permaculture and some sustainable bar operations. So we have compost that we do with all of our citrus rinds, our eggshells, our coffee grounds, things like that, that'll go back into the soil of the herb garden, back into the raising the chickens and the eggs and all of that good stuff. So we have a mini little farm on site. And the chicken logo, or the rooster logo, is also somewhat inspired by a poem that was written in 1917 by Eugene Field called The Bottle and the Bird, about a small hot bird and a large cold bottle, and he's talking about champagne. So there were kind of a couple of little tie-ins there. Chase actually is classically trained Shakespearean actor and studied at NYU. But that translates very, very well to the bartending experience, and that he puts on a show, and whatever show that guest is looking for, whatever experience our guests are looking for, he's really great at feeling that out and delivering that time after time. So
it is like he's on a stage there.
Yes, yeah. You can hear him from across the building.
Yeah,
but
good projection.
Yes, very good projection, but also very, very good at picking up on the social cues that our customers bring to the bar with them. You never know what kind of an experience that the person's had up until the time that they get to us. But whenever they get to us, we want all of that to melt away and for them to really feel like you can enjoy yourself and relax here.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's so deftly woven into the fabric. But the experience here is predicated on that feeling welcomed and feeling engaged.
Like you're one of the locals if you're hanging out here, whether you are or you aren't.
Yeah.
So.
Instant.
Yes.
I love it. Okay, anything else?
Fortunate to have you here today, so.
Oh, my pleasure. To learn more about your world, where would you direct somebody?
You can find us at chasesplacecocktails.com, at chasesplacecocktails on Instagram or Facebook, and then you can always give us a call, too. And my name is Tara Guthrie. I am the co-owner of Chase's Place Cocktails and Kitchen, Fredericksburg, Texas.
Love it. Thanks, Tara. And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Fredericksburg, Texas. We'll see you here.
I've got a friend in every town. I don't mean to brag. Most of them I seldom get to see. And that old Lone Star on that big old Texas flag still ain't as lonesome as me. I'm the loneliest star. Texas.
Where are we?
We are in Fredericksburg, Texas at the Green Fox Guest House.
And the Green Fox, you and your husband's...
Me and my mom, Peggy. It was a house that we purchased in, I believe, 2018. From the get-go, we wanted it to be a bed and breakfast. So that was what we... That was, you know, hit the ground running with that. Found a contractor, found a home builder to take over the project, and we just kind of went from there.
So it was a major renovation.
Major renovation. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The floor in the kitchen was at such a slant, and the floor was just in such horrible shape. Yeah, it needed so much work.
That's partly because
This is a historic property.
Yes, it is.
When was it first built, the log cabin part?
Give or take a couple of years, 1850.
Wow. Yeah, so yeah. This is one of the oldest mm-hmm. houses in all of Fredericksburg.
From what we hear, the second oldest home. I'm not sure what the first one is. I think we're the second oldest, and it was just this original log cabin part behind you. That was the original, and it was originally even smaller because it was just the living room part, and it was home to, I guess, working Catholic families because it was convenient because the Catholic church is right there.
Across
the
street.
So they could just walk across the street and go to church, and the kids could go to school. And
did you ever trip on everybody living in that one tiny room?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure they did. And originally, I think one of the families that lived here, they lived in Stonewall, which is about 25 minutes east. And so she actually brought her 12 to 13 kids plus some neighborhood kids to Fredericksburg, and there were just mattresses lined wall to wall for all the kids to sleep just so they could go to church and could go to mass and school.
That's incredible.
Yeah, they definitely had to be close and tight-knit mm-hmm. to live in that close quarters. So
when did you complete the remodel on this house?
Everything was done, everything was in place, furniture, pictures on the mm-hmm. walls, everything in October of last year, and that was when we opened for business.
And how did it go out of the chute?
It's pretty good. Yeah. Kind of did a giveaway in the beginning to mm-hmm. kind of get some chatter.
Traction, yeah.
Yeah, get some traction. But it kind of took off. Yeah, it took off, and then COVID kind of, you know, put a halt, of course, on everything. We had lots of cancellations, but we were booked solid.
Up until,
mm-hmm.
So for a point, you went to zero, right? When mm-hmm. people just kind of mm-hmm. hunkered down.
Yep.
But now it's starting to happen again.
Yeah, now it's starting to happen again. We have a new management team. They're super great. They've been in the business for about 10 years. It's two gals, and together they've been in the business for about 10 years. They've got a marketing side of it, and they've also got just, you know, kind of the hosting and things mm-hmm. like that, the Airbnb side of it. But yeah, they're doing really great, and we just did a giveaway. We had an influencer come and stay, and we're getting it done.
It makes it easier for you and your mom, right, day-to-day, because you don't have to do the booking.
Yes.
And whatnot, yeah.
The one thing that we like to do is, I'm sure you've noticed the flowers on the table and in a couple of the rooms, and the cookies in the cookie jar. So that's kind of something we like to put a little touch on. So that's kind of where we're involved at this point. And then, of course, just making sure things are going smoothly. But yeah, pretty much we're hands-off.
In Fredericksburg, for the getaways and people coming for vacation and whatnot, when is your high season? Does it kind of go up and down? Or?
It does. I want to say around like October, because mm-hmm. you know we have that big Oktoberfest, right. And there's the wine fest. So really between September to about December.
Mm-hmm. And it's Christmas,
good.
The
yeah.
Christmas time
Christmas
really
is
big?
Pretty good, you know, because mm-hmm. you've got people who don't want to do Christmas at home. You know, they want to get away. Mm-hmm. So we've got that crowd, too, coming.
Yeah. And then downtown does a lot of cool things at mm-hmm. Christmas time.
Right? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I love Main Street mm-hmm. during Christmas. It's one of my favorite.
I was here one Christmas, and it was snowing. I thought that was perfect.
Yeah, that's great. That's very rare.
Yeah, that was perfect.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then I would say, I haven't really looked at a calendar to really see the technical high season,
mm-hmm.
But I think between January and February, you know, January and February are kind of slow. There's mm-hmm. nothing really going on.
Do you modify your rates, get more aggressive at the low seasons?
We do. We're not really hands-on with that. Mm-hmm. Our management team kind of takes care of that because she's got a price optimization calculation. So yeah, they kind of adjust the rates based on the higher seasons and the holidays and, you know, July 4th and things like
right,
that,
right,
spring break
right.
and all that. So
mm-hmm. how much would the low season be to stay here, and how many people could stay here at one time?
Well, I think the lowest is 179. We're actually trying to work on getting maybe anywhere between 2 to 4 people to stay as well. We'll just close the other doors and stuff like that.
It is. It's such a big house.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
mm-hmm.
You could be in one. Like, John doesn't even know whether I'm here or not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But right now, we just market it as Sleeping Six.
And it really is a house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Full kitchen.
Full kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we weren't sure if we were going to do a full kitchen at first, just mm-hmm. because you know, we're first-time bed and breakfast owners. We were kind of nervous, you know, what if the house burns down and, you know, things like that. But it ended up really good. And, I mean, it's a tiny little kitchen. We kept it kind of the same size as what it was before. We couldn't really do much without adding on. You know, we didn't really want to do that to compromise the look of the house.
Right.
So, yeah, we just kind of kept it kind of minimal.
That's really cool. So 4 to 6 would be, and probably a lot of times just 2 people, right?
Yeah, we do sometimes have 2 people. Mm-hmm. Mostly groups. We've had a couple of full-fledged families, but mostly it's just groups, couples traveling together.
Like 2 couples, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. two to three couples, yeah, yeah, traveling together.
That's really cool.
Yeah, we've had some really good feedback. Some, you know, some criticisms, but it's good. You know, mm-hmm. we need that because, like I said, we're first-time bed and breakfast
right.
owners. So,
yeah.
you know, we had to change the towels at one point, or we had to add knives to the kitchen or something. Mm-hmm.
Just
know, something
little
silly we
detail-y
yeah.
things, yeah.
yeah. Yeah. But people have been giving us some really good feedback.
Where do you direct people if they want to learn more and book? Do you have a website that they go to?
We actually direct them to our management team's mm-hmm. website, which is heavenlyhosts.com. Yeah.
And then you ask for, when you go to that portal, is there like a green fox, little,
yes.
little
so
click?
Yes, so what you do is you go to their website, there's a menu button at the top, and it drops down and you select all vacation rental. There's an all and then a pet friendly. Right now we're not pet friendly mm-hmm. right now. And then you just kind of scroll through and there's a green fox
okay.
right there.
Green fox.
Yes, green fox guest house.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
Well, it was funny because my cousin and his wife were moving out of Fredericksburg, and we were helping them move. The wife said, if you want to go into the house, take anything you want, it's all yours. I saw this green fox ceramic cookie jar, and I hadn't had a name yet. And I took it home, and I was like, gosh, I love this cookie jar, but what am I going to do with it? I don't really make cookies. And then I thought, oh, what a great idea for a bed and breakfast. We give them fresh cookies, mm-hmm. and then it was like, oh, he's a green fox. I kind of sketched it out, did a little bit of lettering on some paper, and it just kind of came to be. So okay. it was really random, mm-hmm. not planned at all, but it was a very happy accident.
Well, it's so cool. I didn't even know it was a cookie jar.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, his little head pops off.
All right, Tracy, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you for having me.
All right. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Fredericksburg, Texas. We'll see you here.
Now I'm sitting here looking at a map. I got laid out on my lap. And there ain't too many places I ain't been.
But the underbed music in this show was performed by Texas country music legend Johnny Gimble and Texas hill country legend John Arthur Martinez.
I wish I was sitting right under the X in Texas. Right in the heart of where my heart must be.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative was recently awarded the prestigious Phoenix Award by the Society of American Travel Writers. HLRI was one of 4 recipients of the prestigious award that recognizes international organizations actively involved in conservation, preservation, beautification, and anti-pollution campaigns that further the growth and appeal of travel destinations.
Seventy-5 years ago, World War II ended,
It was the deadliest military conflict in history, resulting in 85 million casualties. We mark the anniversary of the end of that war by celebrating the heroism of our greatest generation, those who served and those who supported their efforts at home. On September 2nd, we will commemorate the signing of the Articles of Surrender aboard the battleship Missouri Memorial at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, a celebration of the peace that followed. Salute their service, honor their hope. Join us virtually for the events on September 2nd, 2020. For further information, go to 75thww2commemoration.org.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of the Second World War.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
The mountains out west or the southern coast are just being where a fella can see for miles and miles. The East Texas hills and the tall pine trees, the level land with the prairie breeze. Maybe I'm lonesome just to see a Texas smile. Right now, I wish I was sitting right under the X in Texas, right in the heart of where my heart must be. No matter where I roam, I never feel at home except in Texas. Right under the X in Texas is where it's best for me. I got nothing against the rest, but why settle for better when you know what's best? Right under the X in Texas is where it's best for me.